You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
Welcome everyone to the From the Shadows podcast. I'm your host, Shane Grove, and sadly not with us again is the super producer, Jason, but he is he's getting better every day, so he keeps checking in with me. He said to tell everybody I'm not even going to try his tagline greetings, because nobody can say it like he can, so you guys will just have to wait. And he'll be back soon. He promises. So he can add, I guess he can start carrying me again on the podcast. I don't know. Maybe that's what he does. I'm lost without him. So I want to remind all the listeners, if you want to, if you got a story or something you want to share with us, you can find us on Facebook at the From the Shadows podcast, or find our forum discussion page at After the Shadows on Facebook. You can contact me directly at Shane Grove Author, or our From the Shadows podcast Instagram page, or go to our trusty old website. Our web guy, Doug, has promised me that the contact page is up and running again. So if you've got a story and you want to send us an email, that's how you do it. Go to our website and send it through the contact page. So so to our truly loyal listeners and followers on social media, you guys will remember that I put up a post a couple weeks ago about the Wampus Cat. And, you know, there was a nice little reaction of people that had heard about this story or heard the word cattywampus used in different meanings. So I finally wrangled the reason that I brought that up. And we'll get into what a talented, fine young lady she is, besides being a cattywampus eyewitness. I'm going to welcome to the program my new friend, Gable. Gable, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Shane. I'm so happy to be with you today.
And you know, hey, everybody, I didn't even have to pay her to say that she was happy to be with me today. How about that?
I'm super glad to be here, folks. And thank you guys so much for listening.
So I'll give a little background. I have gotten to know Gable because, as many of our listeners know, I do a little bit of songwriting on the side, and Gable is a senior at Belmont, right?
Right. I'm just about to graduate.
Just about to graduate in music business, right?
Yes. I'm majoring in music business, and I'm going to go to work into the music industry right after I graduate, which is super exciting.
Yeah. And let me tell you, for somebody as young as Gable, everybody, she's super talented, super driven, and she is a really, really good writer. I mean, she writes some stuff from a point of view that I didn't think such a young person could have, if that makes sense. She's truly an old soul, and I think you guys, as we get into our discussion, everybody's going to see that, you know, there's more to her than just a pretty face. She's got some depth to her. And I won't even go into what a big Dolly Parton fan she is.
A ridiculously big Dolly Parton fan. Seriously, I appreciate all the wonderful compliments.
And so, because we're big believers of if you put it out there in the world, you know, it's going to, I mean, that's the only way something's going to come to fruition. And you telling me the story are you embarrassed maybe to tell everybody what you do with your love of Dolly? Because
you never know.
There might be somebody listening that knows Dolly and
I'll tell them. I'm on the same page as you are. I was thinking the exact same thing. So I had an old roommate my sophomore year of college who her family, she's like a third generation music industry, business side, you know, kid. So she's going into the music industry too after we graduate. We roomed together for a short time and we were driving around Nashville and she made the mistake of pointing out where one of Dolly Parton's offices is. And I thought, no way, are you serious? You know, and I asked her like, this isn't a joke, right? And she said, no, it's not a joke at all. And from that moment forward, I came up with the brilliant plan to once a month write Dolly Parton a letter because I just love her so much. I love the way that she's run her business and how generous and loving she is to people, as well as just so talented and an incredible singer and songwriter. And I would be just incredibly lucky to even be able to somewhat have a career like her. And so I started writing her these letters and I put it in this special butterfly stationery and I tell her all about my life and what's going on and congratulate her on new albums and tell her how much I love her songs and all her stuff. And I will put the letter in an envelope and the envelope in a plastic bag. And I go over to her office and I do a little dancey dance in front of the security cameras and I will unceremoniously throw that letter over the fence and they are actually getting picked up.
I love it. And this will be a shameless plug. I'm hoping that one of the next letters that you write includes that you were on the From the Shadows podcast talking about the cattywampus, because I have a feeling that
I not include that. You know?
I have a feeling that Dolly might read that and be like, "Oh my god, yeah, oh my god, you know, I haven't heard about the cattywampus since I was a kid." You never know. That might be the spark.
You never do.
So I love that story. I hope everybody out there you know, who's waiting for the cattywampus and all the other cool stuff we're going to talk about, you know, was okay with that, because I think that was something that needed to be shared and get put out there in the world. So apologies if it's too long for us to get to the paranormal, but
we appreciate y'all's patience.
We appreciate so because I have no shame when it comes to the paranormal. Probably the first time we met on a co-write over Skype or FaceTime or whatever it was, just flat out asked you, because you were telling me a little bit about your background and you had grown up in, explain it to me again, the Appalachian Mountains, but the Smoky Mountains.
Yes. I grew up in the Smoky Mountains, which is part of the Appalachian Mountain range.
Yes. Okay. And I ask, did you have any Bigfoot sightings? And sadly you said no, but you said, but I have seen a cattywampus.
Yes, that's exactly how it went. And Shane was so surprised and interested. And he's like, what is that? He'd never heard of it before.
I had never heard of it before. So
which is crazy, because you're Mr. Supernatural guy.
Well, yes, but that doesn't mean I'm, you know, I know anything. It just means I'm a geek. So so for everybody out there who is not familiar with what the either the Wampus Cat or the Cattywampus is, give everybody a little bit of a history of what, you know, how this legend or whatever came into being, and then we'll get into talking about your experience.
Oh, for sure. Okay, so there are a lot of different stories, y'all, on what the Cattywampus is and how it came to be. But the one in particular that I learned about later on in life, because as I'll tell y'all, as part of my story, I spent, you know, part of my childhood in the Great Smoky Mountains, and I loved living there. But my parents are originally from Texas. They're not from the area. So as I later learned, while doing my own research, trying to figure out what this thing I saw was that the Cattywampus, the oldest story that we have of it is from the Native Americans. And basically the story goes that one day there was a lady, and she was wondering if her husband was really going hunting as much as he said that he was going hunting, right? She thought, there's no way he's gone out this much, like actually hunting with his friends, haven't brought much back. And so she decided to follow him in the hunting party. And she did this by covering herself in a mountain lion pelt. So she follows the mountain, she follows the hunting party down the mountain, and hides underneath this pelt and watches them from a little bit of a distance, and discovers that they aren't actually hunting. They're sitting around a campfire talking about magic and starting to perform like this ceremony that women are not allowed to witness. So from there, she accidentally gets discovered, and the men curse her to become the Cattywampus and forever roam the woods.
And now that is called watching pro football on Sundays, where the guys get around and say, but
yeah, man, we're doing all the yard work, we're doing the laundry. The house is so clean, you're gonna love it. I promise.
So the legend is that she then became this creature that, in some of the stuff that I've read, where, she dolls, the Cherokee legend I read is if a man sees this Cattywampus or this Wampus Cat, it will doll him as a man, meaning he becomes a babbling idiot, basically, and is no longer good as a man, okay? So, I mean, here's the crazy thing. When I hear some of these stories, it sounds like a real, like a woman that really hated a guy came up with these legends, you know, like,
oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It sounds kind of slanted towards, you know, these dumb guys, you know, and that some woman came. So you knew none of this so what age were you then when we're going to go back to you experiencing some things?
I want to say like 5 or 6. Quite frankly, I was pretty young, and okay. No, I didn't grow up with any of these stories, because as I said before, y'all, like, my parents are from Texas. My dad's work just happened to bring them up to the Great Smokies.
Okay. So kind of tell us how you first encountered something that you later figured out was a Cattywampus.
Yeah, I know. So, well, I'll give y'all a little bit even more detail. My house that I grew up in was on its own little acre of land and surrounded by trees and separated from our neighbors by patches of woods. And it was only like 15, 20 minutes from Great Smoky National Park. And this house was on top of the hill. Like, you could look out the hill and you could see the whole entire outline of Great Smoky Mountain National Park. It is right there. And so I, as a kid, you know, we didn't really have any other neighborhood kids or anything to play with, me and my sister, and she's so much younger than me. And I just had a ridiculous amount of energy that I still have today. And
That's so, the most unbelievable part of this whole story. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm the calmest, most level-headed person you will ever meet, Shane. But basically, I would be kind of turned out every once in a while. My mom or, you know, my babysitter would kind of be like, all right, okay, you go outside and you play in the backyard and you be safe and you just come back at lunch and then you can go out again and then come back at dinner. And so I would go out and I'd run around and these little patches of woods near my house, and they really did cover more than you would think that they would, but maybe that just seemed like so much bigger to me too because I was a child. And so I don't know when it started, but basically what happened is I was going out in the woods one day. I was playing and I got to this dark patch where, you know, the sunlight didn't really cover the trees or anything. And it was just really quiet, which is weird for the woods. If you are a hiker or anyone who's really into nature, you know, if there's not a bird chirping, there's not like a cicada or a cricket or something, something is wrong, you know, and it felt weird.
That's what a lot of Bigfoot eyewitnesses say is like when they're out in the woods or they you know, they noticed that everything just went quiet, and as if there was something else out there that was, you know, scared everything into being quiet.
Right, exactly. And so I'm kind of getting nervous at this point, and I'm like, but you know, I'm a little kid and little kids don't know very much, and I'm just kind of, I turn around and I see, I am literally right in the face of this wampus cat. No joke. This freaking cattywampus is right there, and it is the scariest freaking thing you've ever imagined. I didn't even know how to describe it to my parents when I saw it. It is literally, it's like the size of I would say even bigger than a mountain lion. It's like a panther, like the size of a panther. It is jet black. It's got six legs, and it's like this demonic Cheshire cat mountain creature looking thing. And I screamed and I started running back toward my house. Like, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to scream or run toward, like, from anything that, like, paranormal at all, which I'm sure you know, Shane. That's like the number one rule.
No, I scream. I literally scream and run away from all of it. Like, that's, I totally, I mean, I know you're not supposed to run and scream away from, you know, an animal in the woods that is real, you know, that is flesh and blood standing there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they tell you don't run away from a bear or run away from, because they just, you know, take a natural instinct. They take off and chase after, you know? So
exactly.
So you take off running from this thing, and then what?
Yeah, toward my house, trying to find the way back, because I'm really not that close to where I'm supposed to be. You know, I kind of wander off. I've always had that tendency. And so I am running, screaming toward my house. But the thing about the wampus cat, and people have described this, it can, like, disappear from one spot and reappear, like, right in front of you. Either it's, like, super fast or it can teleport or, like, something. But, like, I was running, and then I'm running toward my house, and I'm going straight forward, just trying to look ahead, and I see it, like, right in front of me to the left. And so I try to, like, veer away from it. And then I kept running, but it kept, like, catching up with me, you know, and it followed me home. And so it, like, stayed the way that our backyard was set up. It's this giant mowed kind of space in the back with no trees or anything, full sunlight. And so I run out of the trees into the field part that is our backyard onto the back porch. And it couldn't follow me into, like, the sun for some reason. And I never really understood that, but it stood there in the tree line watching me. It just sat there watching me. And I freaked out and I ran inside.
So what, I mean, your parents obviously noticed you're freaked out. So
oh, yeah.
What did they say?
They were like, I was like, oh my gosh, mom, dad, because I didn't really know how to describe what I saw. The only thing that I could compare it to was the Cheshire Cat, like the animated one from Disney's Alice in Wonderland. And so I was like, I just ran into the Cheshire Cat in the woods. It was so freaky. And my mom just picked me up. It's like, oh, sweetie, you have such an overactive imagination. You know, it's totally okay. You're safe. It's fine. Why don't you hang out for a little bit? I was like, okay. kind of questioning, like, I don't really think I made that up. Did I, you know? But I guess like if mom will let me stay inside, I'll be inside for a little while.
Holy smokes. So they just thought you made it up.
Yeah. They just thought I made it up. But that wasn't like the reason I know I didn't make it up is because that wasn't the only encounter I had with it. That was the first, and that was like the scariest one, but it wasn't the only one.
Well, what did you think as a 5-6-year-old, that you saw?
Well, I mean, I literally thought I ran into the Cheshire Cat. I was like, that's what it has to be. This is the only thing, like, it was the only context I had.
Okay, yeah, okay.
It's this giant, grinning, demonic-looking cat that can disappear and reappear in new spots.
so you didn't think it was like a real animal that should be out there?
It was very much a real animal. I just thought the version that I had seen before, I was like, that's animated, but this is real. This is the real version of that. That was based on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, no, but I'm saying, like, you didn't think it was a panther or really, like, a bear or a stray dog or anything like that. You knew that it was something different.
Yeah, it was something different. It was something weird, and literally looking in its eyes just chilled me to the bone, even as a child. And I can still remember those eyes.
Oh, boy. So it didn't really... make an aggressive move towards you, but you felt like, I need to get out of here.
I felt in danger. I immediately felt in danger. It didn't, you know, make an aggressive move toward me. And looking back, it's almost like, you know, it chasing me was like it was playing a game. I don't really, you know, because it hurts men. You know, if we're looking at the mythology and everything, but, you know, women, historically speaking, we don't really have as many experiences with it.
Or especially little kids.
Oh, yeah. That's not like a whole lot of thing. And so at the time, though, we did have this lady who cleaned our house. And she would come over and clean every once in a while. And sometimes she'd babysit me and my sister. My parents, you know, knew her pretty well. And I started talking to her because she noticed I was freaked out too. And she's like, you know, honey, what's wrong? And I told her the exact same thing I told my parents. It's like, I saw this thing in the woods, and I described it to her. And, you know, she did grow up in Appalachia. She did grow up in the mountains. And so she took it seriously. You know, she was just listening to what I was saying and describing, and she looked at me and nodded and had a very serious look at her face. She's like, okay, honey, it's going to be okay. I promise it won't hurt you anymore. You know, I'm going to take care of it. I was like, okay. And you know, there are some, like, old Appalachian, like, traditions to protect from things like, you know, haints and weird spirits and creatures and things. And so there are a couple things I can remember that she did. Like, for instance, she put together this little bag of ashes and lavender and something else. And she's like, oh, it's potpourri. That's what she told my mom. It's potpourri. And she put it under my bed, and she put one under my sister's bed too. And I think she put a third one, you know, somewhere else. But apparently it's not really like potpourri. I told somebody else that, and they're like, no, that's actually a charm kind of thing that's supposed to ward off like evil spirits, basically.
Yeah, I don't think there's ashes in potpourri.
No, there's not. But like, you know, it was a closed up little bag. It's just like, don't open it. So like, you know, she just kind of gave it as a gift, you know, whatever. And it stayed there, and I think it probably helped, you know, I have no idea. But I did see the Wampus Cat like on a few other occasions. It just never got that close to me again.
So now, did you say, didn't you tell me your sister saw it too?
Oh yeah. So like it was me and my sister, and we'd see it when we were like together. There was one particular memory, because I was scared to go in the woods by myself again. And so anytime I go in the woods, I wouldn't go unless there were like three or four people with me, even if it was just other kids. So after that, like I wouldn't go in the woods by myself unless there's three or four people with me. And it never showed up when I was with like a ton of people, but it would show up when I was with my sister, for whatever reason, from what I can remember. And so one day we're sitting out on the porch, on the back porch, that overlooks the big yard and is surrounded by the trees and the little wooded areas and everything. And we're listening to this book on tape, because my mom, like, we both love books, but she could not sit there and read to us all day. So what we used to do is go to the library and pick up all these books on tape, and we'd play them throughout the day. And so we're sitting on the porch coloring in our little coloring books at like this kiddie picnic plastic table thing, listening to this book on tape. And suddenly like the tape cuts out. It keeps rolling, but there's like no sound coming out of the speakers at all. And we both kind of like look at each other and we're like, well, we don't want to break it. Should we like go get mom? And I don't remember what she was doing, but she was like busy doing something. And then I look kind of off like behind my sister, and there's like the Wampus Cat back in the woods on the tree line, you know, in the same place where it had like sat and watched me after it chased me home. And I looked at her, I was like, Emily, turn around. I need you to see this. Like, cause so I know I'm not making it up. And she turns around and she looks at it. She's like, oh my gosh. Like, what, like, sister, what is that? Like, she called me Sissy. So she's like, Sissy, what is that? And I was like, I don't know. It like chased me. And this is what I was telling you about. This is what I was telling our clean lady babysitter about, you know. And she's like, really? Like, that's it? And I'm like, yeah, that's it. We just watched it. And we stared it down. Like, we wouldn't take our eyes off of it because we were scared, until my mom actually came out to get us, and then we went inside with her. But even then, we were kind of worried that, you know, as it would got darker, that maybe it would come closer to the house or something, you know.
Holy smokes. So, and so your mom that time didn't see it?
No, she didn't. She just stuck her head out the door and was like, hey girls, come outside, you know. It's you know, like mid-afternoon, you know, it's getting pretty hot, and we were like, okay. It was sometime like, you know, in the spring when it had just finally stopped raining, which is rare for Appalachia. It never really stops raining, but at least it was, you know, warm enough for us to be outside.
So your mom all this time, so is there another incident you want to share? Or I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, like, there were, like, you know, I did end up, like, having nightmares about it after I saw it, because it was just, like, this big, scary thing of it chasing me through the woods and reliving that moment in my head through that dream after it had actually happened. But, you know, I think some people, I don't know why, but some people just, they don't really... aren't as perceptive or don't want to be. Like, in the back of their head, they're like, I'm going to subconsciously ignore certain things or whatever. But, you know, me and Emily both, we had like our eyes on this Wampus Cat. Mom called, we both turn our head to look at her. The second we turn to look back, it's already gone. Because, you know, it can disappear and reappear like that anywhere. So, I mean, it could have disappeared, you know, like right as she opened the door, even, you know, within a weird split second so that she couldn't see it. I have no idea exactly how that thing works, but quite frankly, it freaked me out enough not to want to want to like figure it out a whole lot.
So like for the cattywampus then, when did you kind of start, like, when did you figure out that that's what you saw? You know,
I didn't figure it out until I was way older. Like, way older. Like, I really enjoy, you know, podcasts and YouTubers and people who talk about supernatural and paranormal stuff. And so one day I was just decided, you know, I mean, I'd love to learn more about the folklore and stuff that people up in Appalachia believe in, because, you know, I live there, but I didn't necessarily learn about it. So let's go down this YouTube rabbit hole of watching these videos and stuff. And one of the videos, I don't remember which YouTuber it was, but this one person, they had this video of the cattywampus, and they were explaining what it was and showing the pictures and drawings and everything. And I thought, oh my God, that's it. That's what I saw when I was a little kid. You know, I knew I didn't make it up. It was just like a huge relief for me, because, you know, I'd never forgotten it. And I felt like crazy for thinking that I'd seen this thing.
Well, did you go back then and share, I mean, go back to your mom and say, hey, look, I told you I wasn't making this up.
You know, I kind of did. I was like, hey, like, remember when I told y'all about this thing back home and I was so freaked out, I didn't want to go outside? And I'm like, yeah, kind of. I mean, that was a really long time ago, Gable. I was like, well, I mean, I think it's this, but, you know, neither of my parents are even really superstitious at all. They're very hardcore Christians and stuff, and I love them for it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But they don't even believe in the paranormal.
But they don't remember their daughter being terrified and running in the house that something was chasing them.
I screamed and ran around a lot. You know, I was like,
oh, okay. So you're saying it was such a regular thing that one time didn't stand out from the other.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I had a really good friend that, like, he was like a neighbor, but, you know, neighbor, he's far away. His mom had a trellis growing up beside of his house, and, like, he said, okay, Gable, let's catch some bumblebees, like, in our hands and trap them like butterflies. We'll close the little flowers around them and cut them off, throw them in jars. And I got stung and ran crying, screaming all the way home. I mean, it wasn't, we do pretty crazy stuff all the time. The kids in the country with not a whole lot to do.
God. Oh, yeah. Boy. So have you, I mean, I've never, like I said, I've never heard another story from an eyewitness from a cattywampus. Have you?
No, but also, like, you know, in terms of Appalachia, I don't really know or keep up with any people who still live there. I didn't live there for a long time, only when I was really little. And so it's not like I had a lot of people to ask around and say, hey, have you seen this? Or do you know what this is? But, you know, my babysitter took me seriously. She clearly thought I saw it in order to take the measures that she did.
So now your babysitter was somebody who'd lived there their whole life, obviously, right? And really,
right,
really was, took it, like you said, took it serious.
Yeah, she was an older lady. She had lived in Appalachia her whole life. She was a generational, you know, Appalachian. Her family had been there for a very, very long time, owned land and all that. And they had a whole history in the mountains of just them living there, you know. And so she was aware of all the stories and legends and things. And I think because she didn't tell me, you know, what she thought it was, which is the cattywampus, because she didn't want to put the idea in my head or scare me too much. You know, she's like, oh, I don't want to put words in her mouth. But I think she really did see this thing, or like a haint maybe, which is a mountain, you know, malevolent haunt kind of spirit thing that can show up as a physical creature, or even just as a spirit, and made the decision to do something to try to keep it away.
Well, so first, before we get to the other, some of the other cool stuff we were, you know, we had discussed, I want to throw it out there to anybody listening, okay, that if you know of anybody, if you had your own experience with the Wampus Cat or the Cattywampus or something like it, get a hold of us, because I want to hear another story about this, if there's another eyewitness, because this is I 100% believe something was out there terrorizing you, you know?
Oh yeah. And no, it was horrifying. It really was. And I know there are people out there who, you know, won't believe me, but like, I know, and you know, and there are people who know, so
I don't yeah. need it. Yeah, exactly. I mean, hey, look, if before we got on here, there's a guy I was talking to who's going to be a future guest that has some stories that I was given pictures of some of the stories. And it was like, okay, this is, you know, there's stuff out there that the average person has no idea that's out there running around, you know?
Right. And that science just can't explain.
Well, how could you? Why would they even want to try to explain a six-legged cat-like creature that apparently can make a man go crazy and terrorizes a kid?
Right. You know? I mean, nobody wants to try to discover, understand that. And I'm sure the government has done all sorts of, you know, private research at wherever they do, you know, like the alien research and things on this stuff to try to like weaponize it or whatever. And that there is someone out there who actually knows, but you know, those people won't speak up or say anything.
Yeah. It would be very interesting to see if, you know, okay, we got a Bigfoot in this cage. We've got an alien in this cage. We got a dog man. Oh, that's a cattywampus.
What? Yeah.
But, oh, now come on. Now you're just being ridiculous.
Well, I mean, yeah, like, and the thing about it is, I don't think you can even put some of these things in a cage. Like, you know, cattywampus can disappear and reappear in different places, at least in my experience. And,
well,
it could probably, like, disappear and reappear in the cage.
And what is very interesting about this is, like, you know, the story I found, it's a Cherokee legend, okay? So,
right.
There's a lot to the Native Americans storytelling and legends, you know, that we think, oh, it's just something, you know, they made up or for entertainment, but they didn't really make stuff up for entertainment. Everything had a purpose, you know. Whoa. It had a real reason behind it, whether it was for somebody to learn a lesson from it, or to tell somebody between, you know, right and wrong, and what to stay away from, and how to stay out of danger. You know, they always seem to have a real purpose behind their stories, and they're grounded in the reality that they knew, you know?
Right.
And so, but some of the other cool stuff though, that you talked about the area there that you grew up, is there was different cultures that settled there that also brought with them their own twist on, you know, like stories of good and evil. And you mentioned it, like the what'd you say, the taint?
Oh,
the ain't?
No.
The ain't?
It's called a haint. It's a haint.
Okay.
No. Oh, haint. It's a mountain. H-A-I-N-T, I believe is how you spell it, but I'm dyslexic, so don't take me at that.
Okay.
yeah, it's called a haint. And it's a mountain spirit, and it was a belief, you know, kind of brought over from Africa, and it can be anything from like a spirit to like a hag, like kind of witch, you know, to like an actual physical creature. And there are different ways that Appalachian people like to keep the haints away, because they can only come out at night in the sunlight, you know, like, you know, there are different kind of things on what people believe the sunlight does to them, but it, like, they can't do anything in the sun. But one of the faults of like a haint is, you know, it counts everything. So the reason that like people used to wallpaper their walls in their house with old newspaper clippings is so that the haint would get stuck like in their kitchen or living room, counting all the words until the sun came up and would like freeze them or kill them or whatever. And like people put broomsticks above their door for the exact same reason. The haint will get stuck at the door, just counting, you know, the little different twigs in the broom, and it will, you know, stay there until morning. There's also haint blue, which some people call blue bird blue. It's the blue that you put on the ceiling of like a porch, like a covered porch, that keeps the birds and like bugs from nesting up in there. Apparently it's also supposed to ward off haints, and bottle trees are also supposed to keep them away too. And that's why people use bottle trees.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So did, I mean, I've never even heard of that legend or that piece of folklore.
Yeah. And there are people, you know, there are different TV shows and stuff of people's accounts of living in Appalachia and like haunted houses or houses built on properties that are haunted and having like encounters with haints. And they're so much more vicious than just like a ghost or something. Like they actually mean harm towards a person. So there's really not much you can, you know, you can do some of the things that I listed, but there's not much you can really do if one's around.
Wow. So, you also mentioned something, I know when we were talking the first time about, the bicycle in the woods.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That is a story that really piqued my interest too. So
yeah.
Would you mind telling that story?
No problem. I'll share that. But I also had a thought real quick. You know, people hadn't reported sightings of wendigos, you know, in Arizona and that area, and started getting them on camera and all that stuff until they kind of, the story of them kind of went viral over TikTok. So, you know, maybe if we get this story out there, more people will come out. Well, I mean, it's true.
Do you really think the people of Appalachia are doing TikTok? I don't.
Some of them are.
Okay. All right. All right.
I've seen a few. But anyway.
I'll take your word for it. I'm not on the Appalachian version of TikTok.
You're missing out. We're fun. Okay. We're a time and a half.
Oh boy. A time and a half. I love it.
Oh yeah. Let me tell you about this bicycle in the woods. So there were experiences where I would be with friends or even by myself. You know, these experiences were not selective. And we would be playing in the woods and running around to different little clearings and playing pretend, you know, just doing stuff that kids do. And we'd be like, man, you know what? It would be really fun right now if we could all ride our bikes around, you know, the neighborhood, kind of, or down the road or whatever that we're in. But you know, so-and-so doesn't have a bicycle, and they're like, yeah, I don't really know how to ride one. And I'm like, well, maybe we can do this instead or this or that. And they're like, okay. So we start walking kind of back toward my house and another kid named Zach's house, because our houses were near each other. And we walk through one of these clearings that we had walked through earlier. There was nothing there. We've walked through it earlier, and there's a tricycle, like a little red tricycle, like a little, like the flyer kind, and it looks brand new and totally fine. And we just look at it and we're like, well, should we take it? You know, kind of thing. It's like, no, somebody probably left it here. It's just a coincidence. And we went on and we went home and we continued to like play. But that's not the only time that things would be in clearings like that. Sometimes there were like staircases to nowhere. And it would be two or three like little steps and they'd be there, and then you'd come back to the clearing later and they weren't. There were like toys and different, like, even like piles of like pine cones or, you know, objects, sort of. It could be like incredibly random, or like the bike could even be related to something we casually said.
Wow. And so what, so how did you guys approach this stuff? Like, what did you guys do when you guys came across this stuff?
Don't touch it. Leave it alone. Like, you know, there's certain rules you tell your kids when they grow up in Appalachia, like, don't run through the woods screaming, and don't pay things in your mind. And if you find something, you know, leave it there. And I'm, you know, when it came to this kind of stuff, you know, the Irish have the belief of fairies and the fae, or the she, you know, whatever you want to call them. Yeah. And the Irish are huge, were huge settlers in Appalachia. And I don't know if, like, you know, it's something similar, or even if creatures like that can follow you across the ocean, because they're like in a, like a realm or dimension adjacent to ours. So maybe they were, or like already there or something. But, you know, we just knew better from all those like stories not to touch it, because then, you know, if you touch it, you take it, you owe that spirit or thing, whatever that gave it to you, if, like, you know, you owe it something. Or, like, you know,
yeah, kind of like you're paying it back for what it gave to you. You know, and it may not be as simple as they may really want something like your soul.
Right. Well, I mean, you never know what it's going to want from you, or it, and you don't know if it's even a gift for you. You can't even like tell. Maybe they just left it there and you stumbled across it, and it will be like, you know, and they're going to take it to somewhere else. You know, you have no idea, because the rules of all of that are so complicated. So the best solution is just to ignore it and not touch it and, you know, get out of there. You see it, you go.
I got to be honest with you, Gable. I think it's a miracle that you made it through this far and that you're able to talk to me, because it sounds like a terrible way to grow up. being worried about something coming in your house, of an ain't or hate or whatever. Haint. I've already butchered it completely. That somebody's going to take that original sound clip and just probably play. And can you believe what he said? But that's crazy. Like, it really sounds like it sounds like a magical place. And sometimes the magic isn't always great, you know.
No, for magic. Sure. Magic can be very dangerous. And I mean, that's another thing in Appalachia. A lot of pagan beliefs were brought there. And some of it's kind of even mixed with Christianity a little bit. And there are people who practice, you know, things like witchcraft up in the mountains. There is like a form of witchcraft that is just Appalachian, you know. And
holy
it's
moly.
Mixed. Like, yeah, like actually, like that's a entire thing. And so, you know, and like the stairs to nowhere and stuff in the middle of the woods and stuff, that happens in also like just different parts of the country. There are people that find, you know, different stuff or things leading to nowhere, doors just in the middle of the woods, all like, and then they're not there when they get back. And there are lots of stories about that. And so it's just, you know, I never thought it was weird, because it was the only thing I knew because I was so young. And then it was weirder to me moving to like a suburban area in the middle of Dallas, Texas. You know, because you could kick a tree in the woods, it falls over, nobody cares. You kick the power box in the back alley and the neighborhood lights go out. You know, suddenly someone is freaking out, like, oh, we're going to press charges. We got to check these security cameras and stuff. And you're like, don't mind me, just being real quiet over here. Totally normal.
Well, I got to be honest, if I was in my neighborhood in Dallas, and there was a set of stairs in the middle of the street going to nowhere, it really aroused some suspicion, you know.
You know, oh, for sure.
That would be. I I'm at a loss. I mean, I don't know what this just is some crazy stuff. And I mean, we've had guests on that from Iceland that have talked about the trolls and you know, we've had people on talk about about gnomes and stuff, and it's fascinating. Well, it fascinates me because, you know, there is proof of little people, you know, there's so much proof of it that, you know, people just dismiss it as, oh, there's no such thing. Well, I don't believe that these stories just sprung out of people's imagination.
No.
I think there's some basis in all these legends and fables and fairy tales or whatever. And I obviously these little creatures or little people, I think they still exist in parts of the world. And they see what's going on and I'm like, I'm not interested. We're just going to stick to our own and you know.
Yeah, I think there's more out there that we have. There are so many more things that we don't know than things that we do. And I know there are a lot of people out there who truly believe everything that is like, we've discovered everything already. There's nothing new to find. We're at the peak of science right now. There's nothing new like for us to find. We know exactly how the universe works. And I think that's a really ignorant kind of standpoint. To think that you know everything and how everything works, you know, and maybe there's not like a super logical, you know, sounding explanation for some of this stuff, but there were stories like of krakens back in the day in the ocean, and they've found giant squid now, and they're like, well, you know, maybe they're even bigger ones, but you know, since ships have been around, they've just like, you know, disturbed them, or they're not around as much, and maybe they did really pull ships into the water or this or that, but you know, we just haven't really seen it because we know more about deep space than the ocean. There could be so many crazy things. There are so many crazy things out there we just don't really know about.
You know, Gable, you are wise beyond your years. I mean, let's just listen, Dolly, if you're listening, I don't even know if you can keep up with Gable. Because I am fascinated that you have done your homework, you know, that you really wanted to find out what it was, that you just didn't take your parents' word for it that it was nothing. And that
yeah, I knew what I saw, and my sister saw it too. And you know, the look on my nanny's face and everything while she was listening to me describe it and the steps and measures she took, I was like, you know, she kind of takes it seriously. Maybe, you know, like that's one adult out of three, but still, you know, it's one adult out of three. You know, maybe I should look into this a little bit more, and something just really urged me to, and I'm glad I listened to that feeling.
Yeah, no kidding, because just remember, like one out of three, that'll get you about $25 million a year as a Major League Baseball player. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, it's pretty dang good.
That's pretty good. So, well, Gable, I appreciate that you were willing to come on and share these stories, because I really hope that we get some feedback on some of this stuff. It's, you know, and if anybody else has any encounters with any of these entities or spirits or whatever it was that you were running into and dealing with as a kid, I would love to hear somebody else's take on what was going on, for sure. So yeah. So I want everybody, because now that they've heard you and got to know you a little bit, so that they can follow, and I'm telling you folks, she's a budding superstar. So get in on the action now. Gable, where can all of our fans go and find you on social media and check out, you know, kind of follow your career as you graduate and get it out into the music business?
I would love if y'all would follow me. I have Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, and Twitter, and the username for everything. Every single account that I have is @ITS just J-U-S-T, Gable, G-A-B-L-E, as an Anne of Green or Clark.
That's awesome. So that's not the first time you said that.
No, I've had people ask me up on stage and after shows and stuff, and that's just what I tell them.
Anne of Green. Now, at some point, your younger fans are going to be like, who, where, what? Anne of Green. They're not going to know what Anne of Green Gables or Clark Gable is. But
no, you know. I hope that day never comes.
Well, so everybody go give Gable a follow. Check her out. Follow her career. She claims she has some Appalachian TikTok stuff going on. So I don't know what that is, but let's go check it out. But Gable, I appreciate you coming on, and I hope our listeners had a great time getting to meet you, know you a little bit, and listen to some of your stories, and just, you know, lead somebody else to come forward, or leads people to go out and do their own book work on, you know, the stories and stuff from Appalachian. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot more that can be could be told as far as from that part of the country, for sure.
Oh, of course. I would love to hear even some other people's stories, and I hope by telling, you know, mine, that other people are encouraged to come forward if they've had similar experiences.
Yeah, hey, everybody might make Gable feel even better.
Yeah.
Feel better to know that she wasn't the only one terrorized by it. So, but well, thank you, Gable, and I can't wait for everybody to hear this.
Oh, I'm excited too. Thank you all so much for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.